Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth, Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun Man About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Rachel Jacobs.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And Mary is here in spirit.
Yes, she's on a work visit to somewhere in Jersey, somewhere over there. She crossed a river and she's doing work stuff. But I'm sure she's listening, of course, because she misses us dearly, almost as much as we miss her. We are a podcast on all things fermented. Weekly journey through all things fermented. We cover all sorts of different topics, and we are archived on
iTunes,
Stitcher,
and heritageradionetwork.org.
.org.
And that's where Mary can listen to us,
that's right.
You guys out there, too.
And if you really like it, it's never too early to get started. We're not going to dwell on it too much because we always have a season for it. But if you really like Heritage Radio Network, please support the station at heritageradionetwork.org and click that donate button because we survive off of you when we're all volunteering our time. But this awesome network of people and shows, including Feast Your Ears by Harry Rosenblum, which is awesome. You hear that?
Oh, I've heard insane. A little bit about that
show.
That
was so good.
Could it be that we have a sort of a crossover for our season opener?
Maybe. That's our season opener. Welcome to 2017. Happy New Year. We got a couple fun things happening here in New York City and abroad, which we would like to talk about right now. First off, this Thursday, Kelly Taylor and I are doing the trolley tour 3.0. We're hitting the Bronx. We get in an old 1950s trolley and we go to different breweries. We're going to hit Chelsea Brewing Company, Gun Hill Brewing Company, Gun Hill Tavern, and Bronx Brewing Company. And we leave at 6 o'clock. You can go to kelsobeer.com to find out more information about that and get tickets. I think there's just a couple left, 30 people. We have a giant bottle share on the trolley. It's pretty...
It's super worth it. just to ride on the trolley.
It's kind of
get
insane.
The beer.
Yeah. It's insane. Oh, and our company, of course, right, Rachel?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, see?
Fabulous people, fabulous beer, fabulous trolley.
That's right. Speaking of fabulous people and fabulous beer, my alma mater, the New York City Home Brewers Guild, is hosting its 11th annual homebrew competition, AHA BJCP sanctioned competition called Homebrew Alley. It's our 11th year in existence. We're going to hold it at Alewife. And I encourage all of you homebrewers to enter the competition. You can go to homebrewalley.com to enter. And if you are a BJCP certified judge or would like to steward and help out, you can also register to do so there at homebrewalley.com. If you just want to support your beer, your homebrew loving friends, and you live in New York City, you can come to the awards ceremony, which is going to be at Alewife on February 11th. So the competition is February 10th and 11th. Registration is open now to do that. Later, in late March, the National Homebrew Competition is going to take place, the first rounds, and we're hosting that this year at Kings County Brewers Collective.
What?
So we're drinking that right now. We have Robot Fish 3 in our hands here at Revertis, and we're
still obsessed with them.
Delightfully degusting their delicious libations.
Degusting.
Degusting. Degustation. Degust. It means to taste and savor appreciatively.
Anyway, tell us more about that.
More about that. Well, registration goes up for that on January 30th to February 5th. There's only a week worth of time where you can actually register for the National Homebrew Competition, and it is on those dates. You mail after that, and then we will be hosting it at KCBC for the first rounds on March 24th and 25th. And if you go to the AHA website, you can sign up for stewarding and judging there as well. Prior to that, later this month, or late February, we're doing our first ever New York City Fermentation Festival, which we're very excited about. Actually, it's not really the first festival, but it's the first festival of its size and of its nature. Our friend Zachary Shulman puts on Ferment every year, which is more like a fermentation potluck, and that's really awesome. And so I've got him and also our recurring guest, Cheryl Passwater, and the Ferment group, and we're going to benefit Just Food with this, but we've got a great team of people helping organize it. It'll be a one-day afternoon festival from 11 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon. A bunch of homebrew clubs representing Brunity will be there. We'll have Mama O's Kimchi, Barry's Tempeh. We'll have Brooklyn Kitchen. We'll have Beer Box Company. We'll have Bitter and Esters. We'll have all sorts of stuff. Go to nycfermentationfestival.com to find out more information about that. That will go very live tomorrow, or look it up on the Google machine and the Facebook. You'll find information on that.
That's going to be a really cool festival with all sorts of fermentation vendors, classes, just people to meet.
Damn,
it's
going to
be really cool.
Help desk. It's all ages, so family friendly. We're going to have a kimchi making station and a crowd making station, and hopefully some science corners and some fun crafty kids stuff. So we're very excited about that.
May I ask a question about it?
Whose voice is that?
Who is that?
Oh, hi, this is Harry.
Oh, my God. Your voice sounds so familiar. It's almost like I'm listening to episode 145 from January 4th, 2016. Aceto Back to the Future Vinegar with Harry Rosenblum.
Harry Rosenblum, will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen.
Man, all this applause tonight is really, the studio is full.
It's actually just those two people at the table in front of the studio. They're really loud.
Yeah.
They've been waiting out here all day.
I'm also the host of Feast Your Ears here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org on Wednesdays. So pleased to be back for my second time on
Friend
About It.
We had you were, I think you were our first episode last year.
Oh,
so actually
true.
you are starting this season yet again with us.
Great.
In a different capacity.
So I was going to ask if the Fermentation Festival in February is going to be, it's going to be like as if you listened to all of the episodes of Ferment About It.
Pretty much.
Like all
and the ones we
day.
Haven't covered yet. Yeah.
That's right. And it will be kind of around the same time as we do our 200th episode. So we hope to do a lot of interviews on the floor and compile that to be our 200th episode and celebrate that.
Are you? Is there a current call for vendors? Like, are you looking?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
There's absolutely. So if you are a vendor and listening to this, you could email me at kuzmi@kuzmi.com or nycfermentationfestival@gmail.com, and I can give you all the information and specs if you would like to participate. We'd love to have you. It's going to be a giant smorgasbord of fun, and we have a lot of space. And the space came about because the New York City Brewers Guild is putting on the 8th annual New York City Beer Week. It starts on Friday, February 24th, and goes till Sunday, March 5th. And our opening bash gala is going to be that evening in the same venue. But we didn't want to do a two-session festival, so we decided we were going to outsource the daytime festival to something else. And I was like, well, I think a fermentation festival would be cool. And here we are. So
And necessary.
And what a great lead-up into the celebration that night.
Absolutely. Right. And you know, one thing that kind of brought us to starting this show was celebrating the crossovers of all things fermented and our perspective from it, of both Mary and I being brewers first, primarily. We're very excited about that. But Harry, welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
We're really happy to have you.
It's always fun to come into this studio. Even now, this week, I'll be here twice this week.
Twice this week.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wednesday.
It's warm.
It's warm in here. It's very cold in here. You have been doing your show for a year. When we last had you on the show, we talked all things vinegar.
Yes.
And you are in the process of writing your book and dealing with a lot of different recipes. Give us a couple updates on...
So my book is called Vinegar Revival. That was the name. I don't remember if we had that title. Probably not.
No, you wanted to call it just Vinegar.
Yeah.
And they weren't letting you do that.
Yeah. So the book is titled Vinegar Revival, but I put my foot down when my editor, who maybe she's listening to this, when my editor said that that's the title they wanted. I said that we were then not allowed to have anybody with a mustache or suspenders or like banjos or fiddles or anything on the cover. So luckily, none of those things are on the cover. Chris, you have the copy of the cover right there. So we just decided on the cover.
It's a bunch of people with mustaches and suspenders.
I know.
Oh, wait, no, that's the back. So it's not on the cover. It's on the back of the book. I got you.
So actually, when you open it, it's like one of those birthday cards that plays a song. You open it, and it plays bluegrass.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So we're looking at this cover. It's a really beautiful photo of a spread of things that look like they're maybe pickled in vinegar.
They are.
There's some chilies. There's some pickles. There's some beets. Some tomatoes.
Did you take these photos?
I did not. The photos were taken by an incredible photographer named Ed Anderson, who flew all the way out to New York from California. I really appreciated that, to take the photos, and did an amazing job. The rest of the photos are just as stunning as the cover. And yeah, the book comes out August 1st, so it will be available everywhere. I just today received back the second round of edits, so I received back a full printout of the entire book. This is sort of my last chance to make any fixes. Got to remember to put Chris's name in the thanks.
Oh, come on. I failed.
I think it's already in there.
I kind of failed you, though. You gave me a recipe to help with the book, and I didn't. I got busy starting a brewery and stuff. And
but see, that's what someone told me. I forget who told me this when I started working on the book. They said, if you're going to send out recipes to be tested by your friends, make sure you send the same recipe to at least three people.
There you go.
Accurate.
So did you get 2 for 3 on that one, maybe?
I forget which recipe I sent you, but the recipes, I mean, I think they all turned out delicious. They definitely, the recipe testing phase was a lot of work, as anyone who's written a cookbook, I'm sure, would tell you. But there was a lot of tweaking of the recipes, and of course, things that, you know, if you do, and I'm, you know, this is true, I'm sure the same thing is true in brewing, like, if you have the recipe so clear in your head, and it's something you make all the time, a lot of the recipes in the book are things that I make at home a lot. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, I had to sort of translate that to the page. And so remembering that, like, you know, I don't know, just like little shortcuts that you happen to take, that you have to list all that stuff out.
Yeah. What was the feedback from the recipe testers that you did? Were they very engaged? And
they were. I mean, for the most part, you know, people were very engaged. They gave me really great tips. There certainly were recipes where I had typed it up and forgotten like a key ingredient, you mm-hmm. know, like a recipe that like had garlic in the title that I'd forgotten to put garlic in the list of ingredients. Yeah. So, you know, some real big things. And then a lot of other things about just time of cooking. And one of the things too that, you know, you sort of have to think about is that it's really hard to write a recipe and imagine what everyone's cooking conditions are going to be like. Mm-hmm. Some people's ovens run hot. Some people's ovens don't. People have different kinds of pans, different size pans. You know, you have to be specific and vague at the same time. You know, you say a medium saucepan, but like there's not really a definite, it's not like there's a, you know, I don't have a glossary that says medium means 3 quarts or whatever that is. And so a lot of the things in the book, either, you know, I changed around based on people's feedback of saying, well, I didn't have a medium saucepan, I just had a big pot. Mm-hmm. And I did in a big pot, but I doubled the recipe to do for a party. And so I thought, oh, well, that's good. Maybe I'll put that in the book to make it bigger.
You've been running Brooklyn Kitchen, and you've been certainly well in tune with what's going on culinarily in the city and a microcosm for the world. And your book is called A Vinegar Revival. So that our palates have certainly changed that way for sour beers and other things.
Right.
This is celebrating this, and our palate's coming back to this, or is it
absolutely
kind of preempted?
I think that it is. I mean, I have to say, I was really, you know, I was hoping when New Year's came around that all the like lists of like the hot foods of 2017 would include things like vinegar. Didn't. There's still time. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2018, all the big media outlets will pick up on how great vinegar is. But I think that I think we are having a return to it. And for me, you know, one of the things about that name is that vinegar used to be something I think that was far more prevalent for a lot of reasons, preservation, not least among them.
Right.
That, you know, making your food acidic before there was refrigeration was real important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have been listing sour beers making a comeback, though, so maybe vinegar is the next step.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of some of the interesting recipes that you have in your book?
Sure.
Kind of tease.
So, you know, pickles are the obvious one. That's what's on the cover. Everybody sort of, when you think of vinegar and how you cook with it, I think pickles are the first thing that probably comes to most people's mind. I would say that I have a recipe in the book for some cured, there's a cured fish recipe. There's a roast chicken recipe where you take the whole chicken. It's based off of adobo, Filipino dish, but you, instead of marinating chunks of chicken, you marinate the whole chicken overnight and then you roast it. So that one, I think, is one people might not think of. Vinegar pie is one of my favorites.
Vinegar pie.
Yeah. So you basically, it's a custard-based pie where vinegar is the flavoring in the custard. Huh. And that is actually an old sort of colonial era recipe when in the middle of winter there was no fruit left and people wanted to flavor a pie, they would use apple cider vinegar.
That's awesome.
That's really interesting.
Like, sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So you guys can actually pre-order the book on Amazon.com, Kindle and hardcover. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. That's Vinegar Revival. But Harry, you're not here alone. Who else do we have in the studio today?
Daily Crafton. How you doing, Daily Crafton?
I'm pretty well. Thanks, Chris.
I'm really excited to finally have you on the show. We've been talking about this for a year. I stopped working at Beer Street about a year ago.
Yeah.
I just got too busy with stuff, but I met you through bartending at Beer Street. You live around the block from there.
And right.
As an avid beer fan. If you are an avid beer fan in New York City, you should go to Beer Street because it's pretty awesome.
It was like a celebrity sighting for me, too.
What?
I walked in. I was like, it's Chris Kuzmi.
Yeah, come on.
Did you? No, he's not lying. I remember when Daly said to me, when your name came up, Chris, somehow he's like, oh, man. He said, do you know that guy? And I was like, I just saw him at Beer Street.
It's this radio. It's this face for radio, I tell you.
I did the same thing to an artist I like named Dan Funderburg. And he's not like so popular, but he lives in the neighborhood. And I'd been following his work for a while. And I met him at the park one day. He was there with his kid.
Were you stalking him?
No. We were both there together. And I was like, you're Dan Funderburg. And he was like, you're weird.
Well, I'm honored that you would have that reaction.
Same reaction to Chris Kuzmin.
But I have to say, it's a blessing for me to know you because you've inspired me in a number of occasions from your brewing techniques and from our conversations over the bar and from the beers that you have brought me through that and just as far as brewing techniques and just excitement about some of the funkier sides of life that I did not embrace as a youthful home brewer so much. And I love that you are. And, you
it's harder to control, but
let's get all into that after a really quick break because we're gonna dive down that hole and get deep up in it.
Super.
And talk about the things going on. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It. We'll be right back on The Daily Show with Harry Rosen.
Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sirchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sirchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sirchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolet and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. This is our first episode of the 2017 winter series?
Winter spring season.
Winter spring season.
We wish.
Spring sounds really nice.
It snowed here a couple of days ago in Brooklyn. It's just been really bad.
It's roughly 11 degrees outside, but we're inside some warm, cozy, evergreen shipping containers with Daily Crafton and Harry Rosenblum. We were just getting into all about Daily Crafton. First of all, before we talk about the beer stuff, who are you? What do you do? What is your life outside of beer?
Well, my name is Daily Crafton, but who I am is much, much deeper.
Does it change daily?
It does, actually, as with all of us. That's how it works.
Fantastic.
Fair point.
I am currently self-employed as a graphic designer. My wife, Cindy, and I run a studio called Lockstep Studio, We like to focus on craft breweries to do their packaging and branding and whatnot, because that's a lot of fun.
You realize this all just ties in because I'm trying to plug the New York City Brewers Guild and that's New York City Beer Week again, right?
I've done a little bit of design for the guild and helping pump up Beer Week.
Thank you.
Not only do I love graphic design, I love to do it for things that I believe in and I think that are worth it. So the guild is one of those things. So, I was doing that, and I have two children named Chloe and Jude. They might be listening, so I was giving them a shout-out.
Hey, Chloe and Jude!
Drink beer when you're older.
Do what?
Drink beer when you're older.
We'll
clean
see.
Kegs until you are.
Right. Jude had his first kegger last night for his birthday party, but it was cream soda.
Oh, nice.
It was a rager.
It was a rager.
Oh, man. Nothing like a good sugar high on cream soda.
That's right. Let's see, what else? Yeah, designer mostly to pay the bills.
And that's lockstepstudio.com?
Yes, lockstep. Awesome. Like, soldiers marching in lockstep.
Like lockstep.
Right.
And when did you start home brewing?
I guess it must have been about 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of friends, Michelle and Dana, gave me a kit to... I'd been talking about beer and drinking beer for a while, and then I started talking about... maybe one day I'll make some beer. And then they gave me a kit for Christmas, and I made it, and I fell in love with it. Just kept going.
What kind of beer was your first beer that you made?
It was a farmhouse ale, believe it or not. Appropriate.
It was a farmhouse ale. So you started with a farmhouse ale. Did you go to what was your journey from there? Did you stay in farmhouse ales? Did you go do a straight?
I'd
porter, stout, ale, just ale.
Yeah, I've done a few of those things.
Back. Did that bore you?
No, I wouldn't say it bored me. I enjoyed it, and I was doing that for a while, and I didn't. It never occurred to me that there was just yeast around.
Yeah, here we go. This is what I'm talking about.
On plants and on the fruit and everything outside, and I don't remember even where I came across it. I just read about wild yeast and it was like around on fruit, and I was like, it's just there? You mean you can just have it?
It's free.
You don't have to buy it in a vial.
It was like officially it was the bootleg biology's backyard yeast wrangling kit.
Yeah. Jeff Mello, he's been
on episode 82.
82
and yeast wrangler.
What he's doing is great and
so he's another one. I met him at AHA this year, and I freaked out like he was a celebrity. I was like, "You're Jeff Mello."
Mm-hmm.
He's not a celebrity, but he's
he totally is, dude.
He's a really cool
he's
guy.
He's doing really great things for us in beer, especially those of us that want to taste our place. To borrow Johnny Lever Compton's slogan from Highway Manor, but
he got me. He's spawned all of that inside of me, and so more or less from when I got that bootleg biology kit, it's just been wild yeast, and some of it tastes good, some of it's really weird.
So tell us about the first time you did that and some of the stuff. I mean, you brought in an apple that was going crazy to Beer Street with me once.
Yes, that actually, and this is something I have Heritage Tank for teaching me, that actually it eventually went over into vinegar.
Okay.
Because I had picked the apple up off the ground and started with it, and Harry explained to me that probably once it was on the ground, it was already so far fermented that acetobacter had come over and started getting the alcohol. So it's best to try to do fruit that's on trees or still on the plant, because there's yeast on it, but it hasn't fermented and broken down so much so that the acetobacter is present. If you're trying to make beer, if you're trying to make vinegar, go ahead and get it off the ground.
Yep. Whatever you want.
You've taken a log. You've got a log. Was that a log that came? Was that on the branch? You cut that off?
That was on the ground too, but it never presented acetobacter.
Because it never had alcohol in it.
Right.
Because it never had sugar.
Right.
Right. So the problem with the fruit is that the wild yeast will ferment the juice on the fruit as it rots, creating ethanol, which then when the acetobacter land, they're like, hell yeah.
This is awesome.
I love this. Yeah. So if the acetobacter land on the log, they're like, you got nothing for me.
Nothing. But I did pick it up out of Cooper Park, and the reason I picked it up as firewood when I was picking it up. I was going to burn it in a fire. And then it looked really beautiful, so I decided to keep it, and I thought maybe I'd lacquer it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the further I got into spontaneous and wild fermentation, you read about back in olden times, the families had their magic paddle that they would stir their wort with, and they thought it was magical, but really it was just yeast living in the paddle. And I was like, maybe there's yeast living in my log. I was like, well, I'll ruin one batch to find out. So I brewed up a 5-gallon batch and just put the log in it, and it fermented up as textbook as you please. At least, you know, it tastes wild and funky, like you could expect wild yeast to do, but like the Krausen is textbook, and you just like smell the CO2 ripping off of there. And so now, like, the more I've done it, the more I guess probably the Saccharomyces and the Brettanomyces to a lesser degree has been cultured.
So when you say the more you've done it, have you been racking the beer off and using that initial starter, or are you using the stick, the log again and again and again?
Both.
Yeah, I've used. And do you leave the log in while it's fermenting?
Yeah, until the Krausen falls, and then I put it to secondary. Because I figured by that time enough yeast has swam out into the into the wort to not need the log anymore.
And then let's go back also to, so you say when it tastes funky as you'd expect, but there are a lot of variants of funky. Like when you go to Acetobacter, that's a certain funk that kind of works in certain areas, but not all.
If I just do, I can do it for like 3 or 4 weeks, and it will be estery and phenolic. And then if I let it go for, like, I did one that, and I have one here you can sample in a minute. I let it go for several months. Plus, there was honey in it. Okay. So there was a little Brett food in there. And it got, you know, like, Brett weird. And there was a really thick pellicle on it. Like, I could see the sac arch up and then kind of fall off. And then I saw the Brett arch up. And that batch actually had a lot of butyric acid in it at first.
But you let it ride. I was about to ask about that curve, maybe for that. So,
yeah, you let that, and I learned all that from. I give another shout out to Justin Wilson, who I get a lot of pro tips from doing wild and funky stuff.
Justin is great. We've been planning on having him on the show for a while, but now that he has a new job, maybe you'll be able to.
Yeah,
do it, but
he can talk a lot more Justin science than I can too.
That's pretty great. Yep. So you and Harry, how do you guys know each other?
I think initially we know each other because Daly came in and bought homebrew stuff from the Brooklyn Kitchen, and then our kids...
100 Frost Street,
Williamsburg, Brooklyn. If you drive on the BQE, we have a giant sign that says Eat Real Food, so many people have probably seen that but don't know that we're underneath that sign. Like so many things on the highway, right? I mean, I feel like you drive on the BQE and you see signs and you have no idea. Like, you just know the sign. You don't know what's actually there.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.